Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Future Priest Brother, and I'd like to serve forever as a priest starting very soon. It's now time to start finding your seats for Sabbath services. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Future Priest Ian Hawkins, and I'd like to serve forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and honor to present to you the future priests and priestesses now entering the sanctuary. It's my privilege and honor to present to you our first speaker, future priest Nabiah.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. The title of my speech today is Self-Control. So first, what is self-control? Well, self-control is controlling your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Because our thoughts lead to feelings, and our feelings lead to actions, and our actions lead to rewards or consequences. Self-control is the foundation of moral behavior. When you practice self-control, you stop and consider and carefully consider whether your thoughts and feelings will lead to actions that are morally correct and in your best interest. It starts with our thoughts, so we must guard our minds. You are the only one who can control what you think, so choose your thoughts carefully. So the stop acronym is a great tool to help us do this. The S stands for stop, T stands for think, the O stands for options, and the P stands for proceed. So how can self-control help us in our overcoming process? Can you please turn over to 2 Kefa? To 2 Kefa, it's 2 Kefa 1, 2 Kefa 1, verses 5 through 6. It's on page 961. And the subtitle for the section is Grow to Perfection in the Faith. And verse 5 says, and also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge, and to knowledge temperance, and to temperance perseverance, and to perseverance holiness. And if you'll look down to footnote 2 is for verse 6, and it says temperance, and it says it means self-control. And if you look over to side note G, it says self-control. And it says, let him who stole steal no more. And for your notes, you can write down Ephesians 4, verse 28. And he who strikes with the fist, Isaiah 58, verse 4. And without spot, Ephesians 5, verse 27. So self-control will help us grow to perfection in the faith. And if you would also turn to Galatians. It's Galatians 5, verse 22 to 23. So on page 914, it's Galatians 5, verse 22 to 23. And it says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, righteousness, the faith. And verse 23 says, meekness, gentleness, humility, temperance, self-control, such things are not against any law. So again, self-control is part of Spirit Holy. The scriptures also talk about self-control in 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 5. It's on page 906. It's 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 10, verse 5. And it says, demolishing arguments and destroying every high thing that exalts itself against the one who is Yahweh, bringing under control every thought into the obedience as the Messiah. Remember, our thoughts lead to feelings. Our feelings lead. Remember, our thoughts lead to feelings, and our feelings lead to actions, and our actions lead to rewards or consequences. We must control our thoughts. In the 13th book of Israel, part 1, going for the gold, on page 193, chapter 18, verses 97 and verses 99, and it says, verse 97 says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it. Let him show it by his righteous conduct, by works done in the meekness, humility, that come from wisdom. The wisdom Yahweh teaches you at his house. And verse 99 says, but if you have bitter rivalry and strife, now here you're saying one thing with your tongue in the presence of a priest, and something else when the priest is not there between you. Well, this is the proof. Show me, he says. Show me. You made your brag. Now show me. That's what he said to Israel. But we've got more to do than anyone. That's why we're going to shine like pure gold. We've got to. And we're shining. We're doing it, brethren. We've overcome so much, brethren. I'm amazed. Really amazed. We just got to get the kinks out. So, you can see that Yahweh is bringing us to perfection by making us shine like pure gold. And now we are also becoming purple, Yahweh's royal family. He's doing it with his laws and the peaceful solution. So continue to practice the peaceful solution in all of your interactions today. Use self-control. Stop and think before you say or do anything. And you will be ready to teach the huge number of people who are turning to Yahweh's house. Now I'll turn it over to future priest Yeshaya for prayer.
Future priest, the great deacon, Israel David Hawkins.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. Hope everyone's feeling great on this beautiful Sabbath day. Now, I'd like to cover a subject that's going to be very helpful for everyone as we approach this Feast of Passover and Unleavened Bread, where we're supposed to be trying to get all the leaven out, any sins that we might have, and any spots and blemishes that are going to make us unacceptable as part of Yahweh's harvest that He has preparing. For my first scripture, I'd like you to turn over to 1 Corinthians, chapter 5 and verse 7 on page 890. And this is a scripture we should all be familiar with, talking about getting the leaven out. It says, chapter 5 and verse 7, excuse me. It says, therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new batch, since you are unleavened. For truly Yahshua, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Now, when it says leaven there, of course, it's not speaking of, having yeast in our bodies or anything like that. It's talking about sin, getting the sin out of our bodies. And, of course, we have to kosher our homes so that they'll be ready for Passover as well. But we're speaking of sin. And then in verse 8, it says, therefore, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven. And if you look at the side note there, it says old sins, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Now, remember what the book of Psalms tells us truth is. Your laws are the truth. Yahweh's laws bring truth. They are the truth. So, go ahead and turn over to 1 Kefa, chapter 3. And we're kind of gonna kind of get an outline here of how we need to be. 1 Kefa, chapter 3, and verse 8. It says, "Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, full of brotherly love, sympathetic, and courteous." Now, that one mind there is speaking of unity, which is, if we're all keeping the laws of Yahweh together, we're all going to love one another, we're all going to be in unity. Having compassion for one another, full of brotherly love, sympathetic, and courteous. And the Peaceful Solution teaches us those things there as well. Not repaying evil for evil, nor reviling with reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you are called to this so that you may inherit the blessing. Not repaying evil for evil, that means not retaliating. When we think someone has done something to us that, you know, might get on our nerves a little bit, or we might not think is right, that doesn't mean we have to go back and do something to them equally as bad or worse, because of course that just causes the problems that we see in the world today with nations fighting against nations, and we're no better than the rest of the world. But on the contrary, blessing. Now, how do we bless one another? Do we just walk around and we bless you, brother? Yahweh bless you. Of course, it's great to say Yahweh bless you, but really, we bless one another with our actions to one another, whether we're keeping the laws of Yahweh towards our brothers and our sisters. Okay, that's how we bless one another. Now, for he who would love life and see righteous days, let him refrain his tongue from evil. Now, that right there is extremely important. And all of us, I'm sure, remember the message that was brought out last week about refraining your tongue from evil. And how about how the right words at the right time can make someone realize that, you know, they're loved for and they're cared for and they have a purpose in the house of Yahweh. But in the same way, the wrong words can affect someone the same way. They can make someone think that they're, you know, not worth anything. We really need to be watching out for those things. So, to talk a little bit more about that, I'd like to go on to the Going On to Perfection book, the second book of Israel, which is an awesome book, by the way. You think you heard that last week as well, too. But Pastor says on page 198, which is sermon number 22, he says, you have to set your mind on Yahweh's laws. They will guide you instead of the human emotions that Yahweh said you must overcome. Now, a lot of times when we're going through our daily interactions, you know, someone might say something that gets on our nerves. We might see something. We might be a little bit frustrated. And these things tend to occur. They're emotions. But we have to remove those emotions when we're dealing with each other and when we're dealing with the work of Yahweh. We have to judge with Yahweh's laws. What flares up your human emotions? Think about it. What causes this to flare up? What caused it last night or this morning? When was it that you had your last fuss or fight with your husband or wife? And that's something that, of course, does need to be applied to husband and wife, but not only to husband and wife. Also to brothers in the house of Yahweh, co-workers, you know, brothers and sisters, if you're a supervisor, for the people that are underneath you, that you have authority over, okay? Was that based on Yahweh's laws? Were you criticizing your husband, wife, brother, or sister because he broke the law of Yahweh? Or because he hurt your feelings, which were out here on the end of your fingers, or you were wearing them on your shoulders, or however you want to put it. You know, you were wearing your feelings out on your shoulders. Anyway, Satan turns up this amount of energy, and I have seen it being turned up. Because of this amount of energy, Yahshua said, the love of many is going to grow cold. So notice where we fall into when we allow these emotions to take control of our interactions. We become just like the rest of the world where the love of many has grown cold. Because remember, we're not keeping the laws of Yahweh when we do this. So we're not showing love to our brothers. Now, how many of y'all remember the birth defects the pastor showed a few weeks ago? Raise your hands. Okay? That was a result of the system. This beastly governmental system that is brought forth by Satan in order to remove the laws of Yahweh from the people. In order to destroy mankind is their ultimate goal. Okay, now when we have these thoughts and emotions of gossip that come up and we want to spread gossip and rumors about our brothers and lies about them, or talk down to them and, you know, we get upset and we want to cuss them out because that's the first thing that comes to our mind, That's what we're being a part of. Okay, we're being no better than this beastly system that's ruining lives, killing children, killing families, and we're the same system that spat on, beat, and killed Yahshua. Okay? We really need to think about that before we open our mouth and say these things to our brothers and sisters. Praise Yahweh. Okay? So, this is the same energy that Yahshua said is going to cause the love of the many to grow cold. Now, the pastor says here, how many of you will make it? Only those who will not let your love grow cold by these energies that Satan is displaying. Keep all of these things in mind. Okay, so we don't have to fall into that trap. It's not something that, you know, I've been bred up, I'm an angry person. My parents are angry, I'm going to be angry, and my children are going to be angry. With that mindset, you're spreading that negativity throughout the rest of your family, and you're not giving yourself any hope. The peaceful solution in Yahweh's laws gives us hope out of those things. And we'll go into that a little bit deeper here shortly. Praise Yahweh. So, verse 10 in Kefa 3. For he who would love life, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. Let him turn away from evil and do righteousness. Let him seek peace and pursue it. Now, how do we get peace? Of course, remember what Psalm said once again, great peace have they who love the laws of Yahweh. But you have to love them. Okay, now, a lot of us, if we really think about it, do we really love the laws of Yahweh like a dear friend? You know, like we need to be doing? When we love the laws of Yahweh, that means we hate sin. You know, we do our utmost best to get all the rest of the sin that we have out of our lives. Now, a great way to do that is remember those birth defects the pastor showed us a few weeks ago. And think of, you know, look at the world today and think of the misery and all the destruction, the death that's, you know, occurring in the world. It's not just because of, it's just a coincidence that it's occurring. No, it's because of sin. Think of that and you'll learn to hate sin. And by doing so, you'll learn to love Yahweh's laws because that's what's going to stop the sin in the world today. So for the eyes of Yahweh, praise Yahweh, are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of Yahweh is against those who do evil. So we want to, of course, be in connection with Yahweh. We want to, you know, make that connection and, to where we can make sure we're doing the best that we can to be practicing Yahweh's laws in our lives. That's the only way we'll be in connection with Yahweh. So I'm going to show you how we can refrain from saying these things. Yeah, we need to focus on that we need to hate sin and remove the sin from our lives. But another thing, remember what the peaceful solution is. The peaceful solution is the laws of Yahweh. Okay? So we can't tell ourselves, you know, this is something that I just do. You know, I flare up every once in a while and yeah, I'm sorry, but I'm going to do it again and again. No, these are things that we can control. And the peaceful solution teaches us how to do it. So, I'm in the self-control unit. Let me get the page here. And we're going to be talking about controlling our thoughts and our emotions. Because a lot of times these things just arise because we have thoughts that we let turn into feelings and actions, like the first speaker spoke about, without examining them. And going over them and thinking to ourselves, you know, really, is this going to be beneficial or is it going to be harmful? So applying self-control to your emotions and to your thoughts and to the things that we speak. Controlling your full range of emotions requires you to examine your thoughts. Evaluate what you are thinking and feeling. Then you need to respond in a way that is controlled. But notice this, well-planned. Okay? When something comes to your mind, you can't just spurt it out of your mouth because that's not going to benefit people. You have to plan it. You have to examine it. Is this going to hurt or is this going to help? Then take time to plan it before you say it, and then it'll actually be helpful to people if it's according to the peaceful solution and to Yahweh's laws. It has to be well planned and respectful regardless of how you feel. Just like Pastor said in the Going On to Perfection sermon, you have to take the emotions, get them out of the way, and focus on Yahweh's laws and the peaceful solution. Therefore, you can make a clear and rational decision. We learned about the STOP acronym. Everyone knows what the STOP acronym is that the peaceful solution teaches. Stop. Think. weigh out your options and proceed with a choice that's not going to bring harm to your coworkers, to your brothers and sisters. So stop and identify that thought. You know, that thought that might get you upset and you want to say something negative to someone. Stop and identify it. Think about what actions those feelings might lead to. You know, you could spurt out something negative and hurt people's feelings or disappoint people. Remember, negative emotions can result in harm to yourself and others. Even positive emotions, if acted upon without careful thought, can result in consequences. Those consequences could be as simple as someone feeling, you know, like you really don't care about them. And really, you might not mean to say that, but that's how you're making them feel. Okay, so we really need to be thinking about that. Ask yourself, am I observing this situation correctly? Am I allowing my emotions to cloud my judgments? And am I keeping things in perspective? Your options, you have to weigh out your options. What are my choices? Weigh the consequences and rewards of your choices, and then proceed by making a decision that is respectful and responsible. Now, these things, you know, it's not like you're gonna be perfect overnight, but it's things that we need to be working out and constantly being determined, being persistent and consistent in doing this, and by doing that, we'll be able to become perfect like Yahweh wants us to be. Now, just one more thing I want to hit on before I close. Pastor said, you know, were you criticizing your brother or sister because he broke the law of Yahweh? You know, we should correct our brothers and sisters if they break the law of Yahweh. But we have the priests that we can talk to if someone breaks the law of Yahweh. Because someone breaks the law of Yahweh isn't an excuse for you to go all rampageous on them and start cussing them out and screaming and telling everyone about how bad they are. You have the proper channels to go to. You can report it to the authorities. And that's the proper way to deal with that. Praise Yahweh. So hopefully that was able to help all of us. You know, really think about the way we're behaving, the way we treat others. Examine ourselves, get the little things out that we might think are insignificant. That, you know, I can talk to my friends that way. No, we need to make sure and examine that we're doing everything correctly that we can be doing, okay? So, with that, brothers and sisters, keep striving for perfection. And if you'll all please stand, I'd like to turn it over to the next speaker, the great Kahan Ilya Hyler Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. You may all be seated. Today in the news, of course, we have it's falling apart around us, this world. Babylon is truly fallen. It starts out with showing about these superbugs, and of course, they're in the hospitals, the place you go to get well, right? The hospitals. And they're saying that these superbugs are being passed through the instruments being used. Now, the FDA is supposed to regulate these things, but we come to find out the FDA knows that this is taking place, and they've done nothing about it. So here you have the fox that's kind of in the hen house, supposed to be keeping guard. And then we're learning, of course, if you were to be asked which state in the United States has more earthquakes or has the most earthquakes, which one would you say? Most people would say California, but it's not. It's Oklahoma. Oklahoma now has more earthquakes due to the fracking. And keep in mind, that's where the witness was born, but Yahweh seemed fit to move that work to Texas. He moved that work to Texas, but why? Well, what do we have in these last days? But we have a problem with earthquakes. The land is truly being raped, as said during the Dust Bowl. The land is being raped for money, for gain. And that's what this fracking is doing. But Yahweh foreseen these things. And also we have troubles with war. President Obama recently asking Congress to authorize a three-year authorization to have a war with no boundaries. Remember, it wasn't long ago, Pastor said the boundaries of Israel would soon take the whole Middle East. Well, that's the war we see that's taking place right now, a war with no boundaries. Now, keep in mind, the interesting part was this war has already been going on for 6 months with ISIS. And President Obama asked for 3 more years to it. And of course, it's not going to last that long. It's going to be cut short. Because you see, Isis is telling the Pope, we're coming for you next. You're next on our list. We're coming for you. And Libya, remember, the United States has been in Libya, many countries, NATO has been in Libya, Egypt, of course, United States in Iraq and Yemen. And look at all the peace that's brought for the last 12, 13, 14 years. All of the millions and billions of dollars that's been spent on war. And what do we have? More war. And why is Libya so important? You may not know, but Libya is only 217 miles away from Italy. It's just north. When you have Libya, which is in North Africa, of course, the country that's right up above them is Italy. And, of course, there you have Rome. Rome is open for the taking. And they show how easy it will be for ISIS to do what they want to do if they choose to do it. Now, President Obama is saying that we need to change the hearts and minds of the people. Look for that. That's what President Obama is saying. We need to get community leaders together, and we need to change the hearts and the minds. President Putin is saying we need a peaceful solution. We don't need war. We need a peaceful solution. So who's calling for all of this war? Well, of course, it's the one. Remember, Revelation 6:2, it's the one who sets upon that horse with a crown on his head and a sword in his hand. While Yahweh put his work in Abilene, Texas, which, if you remember, was the least likely place in the world to have an earthquake, he removed it from a state that is full of earthquakes at this time. Be very careful to pay attention to everything that's said in the news. So at this time, if we could go ahead and play it. This time, if everyone would please stand, I'd like to introduce for the next speaker, the great Kahan Benjamin Krause Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, great saints of Yahweh. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. You may be seated. Hope you're not disappointed. I'm trying to think of a title for the sermon because I never come up with them until I'm up here or afterwards when the great Kahan Michael asked me. Let's just call this the number 17, and Yahweh will abolish the gods. Okay? But before we get into that, I would like to tell you some really, really super great news and how the House of Yahweh and Hizra Hawkins is making a huge impact throughout this world. 220, today's 221, right? There's an article entitled, Hizra Hawkins says he will show how great deception has crept into mainstream religion in his new post. And that was released yesterday, and there's already been, get this, 50,503 impressions on that hit on that that story already. Okay? Other places that are running this. It says WJRT, that's an ABC affiliate. There's an audience of 850,541 people. Okay? These aren't small numbers here. This is making a huge impact everywhere. Yeah, you can clap. You should clap because the word of Yahweh is going forward. Also, WWXIX, an audience of 750,965. Okay? Looks like KTVN, which is, I believe, an NBC affiliate, looks like 536,712 on this story just from yesterday. And then KNDU, it's another NBC affiliate. There's an audience of 513,210 that are tuning into this. So you can see how rapidly this is spreading. Now, last week on 2/13, which I thought was a really, really excellent, excellent Sabbath food served up to us by the great women of the House of Yahweh, it says, Hizra Hawkins says he will share great secrets from Bible prophecy in a new publication posted online that was released 2/13, actually the day before that Sabbath. And the total headline impressions have been 88,295. And finally, Hizra Hawkins, there's another article that's been released, a news release. Hizra Hawkins says There's a set of rules all nations can follow to bring world peace in the new open letter. And I'm sure President Putin is going to be really thrilled when he hears about this. It was released on 2/6/15, and the total impressions are 104,192. Give it up for Yahweh. Now, that's really awesome news. Let's get to some more awesome news. Now, first of all, I'm going to have to ask you that you have your pen and paper? And your pencil and paper in case you make mistakes, and a big eraser to erase them with? Okay, because we got another slideshow for you. And I'm going to tell you, this came together just in the last 4 days. Okay? This is how important Yahweh thought this was to get to you on this Sabbath day. If we could have slide one, we're going to take a little trip down memory lane. This is a quote from the 13th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 18, verse 52, where pastor says, but anyway, that was the 17th. I wanted to tell you about that. The 17th, if you remember the number 17, I was given a lot, and I told everyone about this lot that I was given, and it was a stone, a white stone. Later, I saw that this was actually prophesied in Revelation. Given a white stone, but it had three numbers on it, and the first number on that was 17. Now, I was expecting the 28th, 28 was the next one, and I was expecting something really big to take place on the 28th of the Omer, but it didn't. But he used the Roman 17 to show this first one, and I told you the crown. And that was on the 17, crown on my head. Remember the picture of over the sanctuary, a pastor being crowned. And then the 17th is when I finished that song that I told you I wrote to the Feast of Weeks and the Feast of Harvest, the Feast of the Seven Works that Yahweh brought forth. May I have the next slide? This is from the 12th book of Yahweh, part 1, chapter 2, verse 59. The next day was the 28th. Now, that wouldn't mean anything to me at all, but if you remember, I saw a white stone, and I told everyone about this. And I had the date of when I told everyone, but I hope you remember it. And by the way, I hope you remember it, because I searched, not only did I search, but the mailroom searched. I had everyone search, and the future priests, everyone searching for the original quote, and I think I've narrowed it down. I'm kind of suspicious. I'm thinking he told this to some people, because it was relayed to me, the conversation he had. But if anybody knows where that is, please bring it forward, okay? Not right now, but bring it forward a little later. Okay, he says, I hope you remember it, but it had three numbers on it, this white stone. And that white stone had three numbers, and one of them was 28. One of those numbers was 28. So it was 17, 28, and 74 that was written on that stone. Or 74. I think it was 74 at the time when that stone was shown to me, and it came into my mind, or was placed in my mind, this is your lot. This is your lot. Now, keep that word lot in mind as you go along as well. But keep those numbers. You got them written down, right? We have the next slide. Now, the number 17, let's talk a little bit about the number 17. The number 17 is the seventh in a series of prime numbers. I don't know if you know what prime numbers are. And then the other numbers, can't remember the name of the other set of numbers, composite, I believe, numbers. But the 17 is the seventh in a series of prime numbers. Seven signifies completeness, adding to the significance of the number 17. And if you show the next slide, I'll show you a chart to kind of give you an idea. Notice the first prime number is circled. It's the number 2. Okay, these are the only prime numbers. The prime numbers are in pink. Okay? The first prime number is 2, and the seventh prime number is 17. 2:17. Okay? Everybody got that? Let's go to the next slide. Talking about the number 17, what does this mean, the number 17? In the book of Yahweh, the number 17 symbolizes overcoming the enemy and complete victory. Okay? Now, if you remember, Yahshua gained a complete victory over death. He was raised on the 17th of Nisan, 3 days. Remember, he was sacrificed between the two evenings on the 14th. Remember? 3 days and three nights later, 72 hours later, on the Sabbath day, just before sundown, on the 17th, he was raised from the dead, overcoming death and the grave. In Noah's day, the windows of heaven opened on the 17th day of the second month. On the 17th day of the seventh month, the ark rested. Okay? And you can find that in Genesis 7, verse 11, and also Genesis 8, verse 4. Remember, they were saved out of the water. They overcame that death. Now go to the next slide, please. Now the number 17 in prophecy, just turn over to Daniel chapter 7 real quick. Daniel chapter 7, because I want to show you a word here. It's very important for you to remember. Daniel 7. We're going to look at verse 24. Actually, remember this beast that had 7 heads and 10 horns, right? Which is a total number of 17, okay? And remember I told you in the last slide that 17 symbolizes victory, conquering, overcoming, prevailing. Okay, those all four of those words are actually synonymous. Victory, overcoming, prevailing, conquering. Okay, write those down. Now let's look at Daniel 7, verse 24. It says, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them. Remember, they prevail against the saints. And look at verse 22. Until the Ancient of Days comes and judgment is given to the saints of Yahweh, and the time comes that the saints possess the kingdom. Okay? Now, what I want you to understand in this is the idea of overcoming. Okay? That, remember, there's two types of overcoming and two types of conquering. And I think the great Kahan Ilya just mentioned one of them. Let's turn over to Revelation 6:2. Revelation 6:2, found on page 974. Revelation 6:2. And remember, this is the white horse. And he who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him. And he went out conquering and to conquer. Okay, there's that word that you need to keep in your mind. Conquering and to conquer. But remember, this is a false piece here. This is not Yahshua here on this white horse. Okay, this is the conquering of slaughtering, raping, raking, pillaging, stealing, murdering, and all these other abominable things that come forth from the seven hills of Rome. And it's the sword and the cross, okay? It represents the sword and the cross. Okay, now, I don't want to lose my train of thought. And also Revelation 13, remember, talks about the beast that had 7 heads and 10 horns. So that number 17 is very important for you to understand the idea of conquering, whether it's Yahweh's conquering, which we're going to talk about in a minute, or overcoming, prevailing, conquering that the enemy does, which is the total opposite of Yahweh's way. Also, on that same slide, you should have that slide back up, the same one we just had. Okay, Psalm 83, verse 6 through 11, we're not going to go there and read it, but there's 17 total enemies of Israel that Yahweh helps to overcome. Okay? 7 of them were in the past. 10 of them are listed as ones that are still trying to prevail against Israel. Okay? You can read that on your own time. But I want you to get in your mind right now the number 17 and what it represents. The white stone and all these other things. So go to the next slide, please. Continuing on this 17, I want you to notice Romans 8:35 through 39. You don't have to turn there. You can read the slide. It says, who will separate us from the love of the Messiah? Will tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? There's seven right there. And then he answers the question with 10. He says, no, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death, nor life, nor malachim, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other thing in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of Yahweh, which is in Yahshua Messiah, our King. Now, there's a total number of 17 there. Okay? Get this in your mind about this conquering. We are more than conquerors. Okay? Can we go to the next slide? Hebrews 12. We see the same pattern again. Okay? Where the contrast between the old covenant and the renewed covenant are shown. And it says in verse 18 through 24, you are not come to the mount that might be touched and that burned with fire, nor with blackness, darkness, tempest, and the sound of a trumpet and the voice of words. That's seven. Okay. But you are come, talking to us in these last days, unto Mount Zion, unto the city of the living Father, the heavenly Yahweh Shema, to an innumerable company of Malachim, to the great gathering, namely the called out ones of the firstborn, and to Yahweh, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men having been made perfect, you know, like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who will be in the kingdom, and to Yahshua, the mediator of the renewed covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks better things than that of Abel, because Abel was killed. But this last Abel, he ain't going nowhere. Okay? That's 17 total. Okay? Can we go to the next slide? Sorry. Whoop. Okay. 1 Corinthians 13. Love is mentioned 17 times in this verse. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not jealous. Love is not boastful. Love is not puffed up with pride. Love does not behave rudely. Love does not seek its own advantage. Love is not provoked. Love thinks no evil. Love does not rejoice in iniquity. Love rejoices in the truth. Love does not betray. Love believes all things. Love hopes all things. Love endures all things. Love never fails. These three things endure, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. 17. Okay? Why? Turn over to 1 Corinthians 15. 1 Corinthians 15. It's not the love of the world, okay? It's not that touchy-feely, fake stuff that you get in the world. 1 Corinthians 15. We're going to look at verse 55 through 57. On page 899, it says, O death, where is your sting? O Sheol, the grave, where is your victory? The sting of sin is, can't see through my writing here, death. The power over sin is the law. Okay? And thanks be to Yahweh who gives us the victory through our high priest and king, Yahshua Messiah. There is those words, victory, again. Okay? This is not a coincidence. Now, turn over now, because I want to show you that conquering power in 1 Yochanan. 1 Yochanan, chapter 5, found on page 966. 1 Yochanan 5, we're going to look at verse 4. But we're going to start in verse 1 because I want to get you, I want you to get the whole feel of this passage here. It says, whoever believes that Yahshua is the Messiah is begotten of Yahweh. Do you believe that? Yeah. Well, of course you do. You wouldn't be sitting here. If you believed Jesus was, you'd be in some other place. Or Yeshua, you'd probably be in a synagogue somewhere, right? No, it's Yahshua. Yahweh will save his people from their sins. And everyone who loves him who begot also loves him who's begotten of him. Verse 2, by this we know that we love the children of Yahweh, when we give them a hug and a kiss and a free meal. No, when we love Yahweh by keeping his laws. Verse 3, for this is the love of Yahweh, that we keep his law. And his law is not grievous. Now, key in on verse 4. And whoever is begotten of Yahweh overcomes the world. And this is the conquering power that has overcome the world. The faith that he who is Yahweh gave. The whole system, the 613 laws and the prophecies, this is what overcomes. This is the conquering power given to the saints. Not the sword and the cross that the Catholic Church uses. Okay, we're on schedule. I haven't messed up too much yet. Can we play disc 1 and 2, please? Now, before I play this, please pay very, very close attention. Play disc 1 and 2, please.
They're out of a sci-fi novel, right? Well, they could be, because scientists are pretty stumped. The plumes, which reportedly reach more than 150 miles above the surface of Mars and spread between 300 and 700 miles wide, have appeared at least twice on the Red Planet. The first time was in March of 2012, when a plume appeared and stuck around for 11 days. In April, another plume appeared and lasted 10 days. But it wasn't astronomers in a multi-billion dollar observatory who first laid eyes on them. That credit goes to patent attorney by day and amateur astronomer by night, Wayne Jasky, who first spotted the plumes and posted images of them on his blog. The Pennsylvania man told National Geographic, "I sent a couple of frames to some guys I know in Australia and asked, am I seeing things?" He wasn't, and now scientists are looking into it. One letter published in Nature raises some possibilities, but no solid answer. And a planetary scientist at the European Space Agency told BBC it raises more questions than answers. Not a lot of help, but there are some theories floating around. One is that it was a giant cloud of carbon dioxide, water, or dust, though it rose to a higher altitude than clouds normally appear on Mars. Another is that it was a giant aurora, kind of similar to the northern and southern lights we see here on Earth. Whatever it is, scientists aren't entirely sure, but you can read their best guesses over at nature.com. For Newsy, I'm Elizabeth Hagedorn, multiple sources, a broader view.
Disc 2.
A Martian mystery still unsolved. In the spring of 2012, an amateur astronomer peering into space picked up this incredible and unexpected sight, circled in yellow, in the southern hemisphere of the Red Planet.
He had no idea what it was, and as the New York Times reports, he called it, quote, a Martian stumper.
What he saw were giant red plumes spitting out into a cloud reaching about 150 miles above the surface. They lasted 10 days. The event has been studied ever since, and the journal Nature is out with results. As one scientist told the BBC, quote, they raise more questions than answers. Scientists dismiss the plumes as too high to have been a cloud, so the mysterious flare-up remains as baffling.
They're baffled. That's all you need to know. They don't know what it was, but you're going to see here in just a second. Praise Yahweh for the wonderful technology in these last days. Okay. Now, so y'all just saw that there's... Now, let me set you up for this, because you got to understand so you can really appreciate how this all went down. As a matter of fact, can I get the next slide first before I continue? Next slide? Okay. All right, if you notice, this is from the Washington Post, and I've circled the date that this came out. This is when I saw it. February 17th, the 17th. Now, let me set you up. On the morning of the 17th, before I saw this, let me go back a couple weeks. After I did the sermon on 1962, I had a discussion with Pastor, and he mentioned to me again the white stone and the three numbers on the white stone. And he said, could you look into that? And I said, you know, of course, I'll pour my whole heart into it, okay? And I did, and I studied it, and I came up with some things that I already showed you about the number 17. and the other numbers, which I'm not going to go into today. We're going to focus on the number 17, but on the morning of the 17th, I was thinking about today's the 17th. Something's going to occur today, right? Because the 17 was in my head because I was studying. I couldn't have been 30 minutes later when I was reading the news. I believe it was Drudge Report, and it had a link to this thing about this cloud on Mars, the mystery cloud. And here's what I read. Massive plume on the surface of Mars no one can explain. Now, I want you to focus in on the bottom of that slide where it says, this is a quote from the article, "There are shapes going from double blob protrusions to pillars or finger-like shapes." Pillars. We have the next slide. Here is a picture. This is the only picture that you can actually see what's in that cloud. Okay? And what I did is, what we had to do is we had to rotate it up slightly so you can see Pastor looking straight at you. Okay? Now, I want you to look at that very close, because right, I believe in the next slide. Go ahead and play the next slide. Okay? Right there, you're going to see Pastor Israel Abel Hawkins. Okay, now, this was taken. Now, remember, this is not something that was taken recently. This was taken in the spring of 2012. As a matter of fact, we're going to read here in just a moment exactly when, and you're going to be amazed how Yahweh is working with this house. Go back one slide. Look at that closely. Now, you can get these online, you know. I mean, there's only three pictures you're going to find, okay? Two of them look like nothing. You can't really make anything out. This one's the only one you can see through, and that's where you can see Pastor plainly in it, okay? Now, okay, let's go now to the letter, the next slide, that they alluded to, that the scientists put out. And what we did is, we took the important quotes out of here. We pulled them out. You can read the article yourself by going online and reading it, or we'll show you a copy of it. But here's some of the important quotes you need to get in your head. You need to write these down. I hope you still have your paper and pencil and pen. It says here that it was first seen March 12, 2012. Okay? And the protrusion, or the cloud, became more prominent over the following days, and on the 20th and 21st of March, it was captured by at least 18 observers. So remember, this wasn't NASA that found this. These are guys that were, amateur astronomers looking up in the sky, and they saw these things. On the other side, it says, the plume was detected for 11 consecutive days from the 12th to the 23rd of March. You'll see the significance of all this in just a moment. On the 6th of April is the second time that they saw it again. And this is 2012. And it was observed near the same... I can't read my own... I can't read this thing. I should have brought my glasses. They're in my bag. Hint, hint. May? What does it say? Oh, near the same spot the other one was, okay? But now this was from April 6th through the 16th, okay? And then it says each event had an overall, plus or minus 10 days. And this occurred at another time, way back in 1997. One other time this was spotted. 17th of May, 1997. Write that down, because all this is very important, okay? Remember, Yahweh doesn't put these things up there just to, hey, look what I can do. No, these are messages that are written to us. Okay, can you go to the next slide? Okay, now, on page 2 of that letter, from those scientists that they put out this study, which, by the way, their conclusion was, we don't know what it was. They still don't know. But you're going to know. Okay? Okay. Great, thank you. March 21st, this is actually, the first time it was spotted was March 12th. Don't get this confused with these dates and times that I have right here. I have these here because these are showing what's in those figures. It's giving dates and times that they were seen. Now, these times that you see to the right where it says 321, 245, those are UTC, Universal Time, okay? Universal Time. Now, March 21st, which is 321 in this one figure here, actually, what I want to key in on, I can't go into all the numbers right now, but I want to key in on number D, which was March 21st at 345, and this was one of the most prominent ones. The reason why March 21st is listed here so much, because remember, it was seen from the 12th, and from the March 12th, it started getting bigger and bigger, and the biggest it became was March 21st at 321 and at 325. Write that down. At 321 and 345. I'm sorry, 345. So I looked up, because that's when you would have seen Pastor's face, when the blob was the biggest at that time. Now, can you go to the next slide? 345 from Strong's. It says Ayah, from the same as 344. Can we have the next slide? And it means hawk. Hawk. Huh. And if you notice down at the bottom, it says a kind of hawk. Hawk, keen-sighted. Keen-sighted. You know, like hawk-eyed. Remember we talked about that before, didn't we? Well, this is going to make a little more sense here in just a minute. But keep that number 321. Because remember, go back a slide, please. Go back two slides. March 21st at 321. Or on 321 at 321. 321 at 321. 321 at 321. Okay? Now, keep those in your mind, okay? Very important. Go forward to the next slide. Next slide. Next slide. That morning, I spoke to Pastor, and this was amazing because we were talking about, remember, I was studying the white stone. While I was on the phone with him, it dawned on me, what, today's 217, isn't it? I said, 217, isn't that Revelation 217 talk about the white stone? Isn't that Revelation 217? Huh. I guess that's just a coincidence, right? Well, notice the same day, at the end of the day, Scott Pelley on CBS Evening News ran a story. We're going to show it to you in a minute. And this is just the headlines for 217, February 17th of this last Tuesday. Boston talked about the staggering snow load. And then something new in the cloud. Now, we're going to play this video, and I want you to see this brilliant psychological move made by the Catholic Church, who runs the media, who wants to make you think we're a bunch of nuts. Okay? Right now, why don't you go ahead and play that video.
On ice, sliding on it, sailing through it, ducking under it, and leaving thousands in the cold and dark. The West Virginia disaster raises new fears about railway accidents waiting to happen. The jury hears what the gunman told police after he shot American sniper Chris Kyle. And it's not heaven, it's Iowa. The Hawkeye discovery that has some folks on cloud nine. This is the CBS Evening News with Scott Pelley. Some people wish on stars, others shoot for the moon. And then there are those folks Mark Phillips tells us about. For them, the silver lining is in the clouds.
Cumulus means stacked or heaped.
Mm-hmm. Clouds, Gavin Preter Pinney feels, get a bad rap.
They generally are considered a negative thing. When there's bad news in store, there's a cloud on the horizon. Definitely.
But the founder of the Cloud Appreciation Society and his 37,000 members around the world have their heads in the clouds and think that's a good thing.
They associate them with dreaming. They associate them with freedom, freedom of the imagination.
Imagine this one.
Wait a minute. There's two cats dancing the salsa. These clouds are
Preter Pinney takes his audiences back to their childhoods, seeing the shapes they saw as kids.
Let's say you're in love, all right? And you look up, and what do you see? Right?
In their constant cloud gazing, Gavin and his members feel they have made an important scientific discovery, a brand new cloud. One that looks like it was cooked up by the special effects department of a disaster movie. One that looks like it was cooked up by the special effects department of a disaster movie. One so rare, meteorologists have never classified it before.
This cloud looks a bit like you're, as if you're down underneath the water looking up at the sea surface on a turbulent day.
So cool, the society gave it a cool Latin name, Undulatus aspiratus, and submitted it to the UN's World Meteorological Organization, which is poised to officially recognize it, a big deal in the cloud spotter world.
If it goes in there, yeah, it'd be the first new type of cloud since 1951.
Is it also in some ways a justification of all the time that you waste looking at clouds?
Yeah, the funny thing is you don't need a justification.
You just need a little blue sky thinking. Mark Phillips, CBS News, Somerset County, England.
Let me ask you the $10 million question. Hey, that was somebody's bell one time, wasn't it? Let me ask you the $60 million question. What would be the odds of that story running on 217, the same day that this came out about the Mars cloud? What's really amazing about it is I normally never watch the evening news. I usually watch it here. But I actually watched that news broadcast that night. And the person that was sitting next to me said, that story was against us. 2 days later, having a conversation with Pastor on the phone, he goes, hey, did you see KTAB the other night? And I reminded him, I don't live, but I can get it online. Do I need to go there and watch something? And he said, yeah, they ran a story about clouds. And he said, I told the people that were sitting next to me when they ran it that it was a great psychological move. And I said, you know, I saw that story too. I said, that was the Scott Pelley story, right? And I said, the person that was sitting next to me said the same thing. And Pastor said, that's a very wise person. Making you think, remember he said Hawkeye too. What would be the odds of him using that term? Nobody uses that term but us. That's our term. We came up with that. We're the keen-sighted. We're watching for things. Yahshua told you to look up, didn't he? He told you to look up and cheer up because your redemption draws near. All right, can we go to the next slide? Let's talk a little bit about Mars. Let's get a little history on this Mars guy. Not the candy bar, not the candy bar company or that made the Almond Joys and the Three Musketeers, but the Mars, the Roman god Mars. And I remember it's called the Red Planet, all right? And it's named after the Roman god of war and destruction and masculinity. Hope I covered him up. I'm pretty sure I did, for the most part. It says, first century Mars found in the Forum. This statue you're looking at is found on Capitoline Hill in Rome. Because, you know, that's where all the gods are, isn't it? You wouldn't find that here. You know, you're not going to find those statues out in our grounds anywhere or in the sanctuary here. You're going to find them outside the gate everywhere. But this one's on Capitoline Hill, the Seven Hills of Rome, in a museum. And I want to read to you the circled, the Spear of Mars. It says, his consort, that means his lover. He had a lot of lovers. He was a fornicator and an adulterer. One of them was Venus. And his father was Jupiter. Jupiter. You're going to see how this ties in from 1997 that you just heard about when they saw it back in 97. And his Greek equivalent is the Greek god Ares or Ares. Can we look at the next slide? Continuing about the god Mars, it says most of his festivals were held in March, the month named for him. Now, isn't that amazing that this Mars photo, this cloud, was seen in March, okay? March, named after, that's what the planet Mars is named after. March is named after the god Mars. I guess this is all just a coincidence, but we'll see. And his Latin name was Martius, okay? And go to the next little spot here. It says, although Ares... Okay, hold on. I'm in the wrong one. Okay. It says, although Ares was viewed primarily as a destructive and destabilizing force, Mars represented military power as a way to secure peace. Does that sound familiar? In the mythic genealogy and founding myths of Rome, Mars was the father of Romulus and Remus. Oh. Now, isn't that, you know, that story about the she-wolf? Right? How Rome was founded, right? Remember that myth? Well, Mars is the father of these two mythological people. Are you starting to see who this is really talking about here? Can you go to the next slide? I want to show you, there was festivals that were held for the Roman god Mars, and they still are. I'm sure there's still people that celebrate these. February 27th is when they start, but March 1st, most of them are in the month of March, and the very last one is held on March 23rd. Remember, that's the last day that plume was seen on Mars, March 23rd. It ended then, okay? And then the only other ones are in October 15 and 19, but most of them are in the Roman month named after him. Can we go to the next slide? Now, the word Mars is only mentioned one time in the Holy Scriptures. Acts chapter 17. Right? Another coincidence. And it talks about the Apostle Shaul when he went to what's called Mars Hill. It's also called the Areopagus. Okay? Because it was named after the Greek god Ares, who was later identified as Mars by the Romans. Okay, remember, the names changed, but the gods are the same. Okay? Now, it was from this location that he gave his sermon, his famous speech, it says, in Acts chapter 17. Let's turn over there, by the way, because I want to show you something very important there. Acts chapter 17. Remember, he went there and he saw all these gods, right, everywhere. And he found even an altar to the unknown God. And he told them all these gods are worthless. There's only one creator. There's one father of us all. And that was his great oration that he gave there at the Areopagus inside this temple here up on that mountain there. Acts 17, we're going to look at, I'm not even in the right chapter. Acts. Okay, give me just a second. Acts 17. I want to show you, it starts in verse 22. It says, then Shaul stood in the middle of Mars Hill, and he said, men of Athens. Remember, this was in Athens, Greece. That's why, remember, Ares was a Greek god. Okay? And Ares became Mars when the Romans came around. He said, I perceive that in every way you're given over to religious observances and the worship of your gods. Much like they are today. For I passed by carefully observing your objects of worship, and I came unto an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. That, then, is what you ignorantly worship, having no understanding. This I announce to you. Yahweh, who made the world and all the things in it, being creator of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he served by human hands as though he lacked anything, since it is he himself who gives life to everyone and breath and all things. And now I want you to notice in the very last verse on page 860, I want you to notice verse 33 says, so Shaul went out from among them. That means he went out of the Areopagus. Did you know that the Areopagus was the supreme court of Athens, of Greece? The Areopagus. It was their high court, okay? And notice who joined him in verse 34. Certain men joined with him and believed. Among them was Dionysus, the Areopagite. You know what an Areopagite is? He's a judge. A judge of that court was actually converted by the Apostle Shaul's preaching. A judge. Let's go to the next slide, please. It says the Areopagus is the composite form of the Greek name Areopagos, translated the Rock of Ares. Later, the Romans referred to the rocky hill as Mars Hill, after Mars, the Roman god of war. The term Areopagus also refers to the judicial body of aristocratic origin that subsequently formed the higher court of modern Greece. Okay? Remember, the Greek Empire came before the Roman Empire. Okay? Can we have the next slide? Let's learn a little bit about the god Ares. He's the Greek god of war. He's one of the 12 Olympians and the son of Zeus and Hera. And we know who Zeus is, right? He was a dangerous force, overwhelming, insatiable in battle, destructive and manslaughtering. He is well known as the lover of Aphrodite, the goddess of love. The counterpart of Ares among the Roman gods is Mars. Now, these facts are all taken from Wikipedia, by the way. You can read these for yourself. I brought them to you so you don't have to. Now, remember this, do you remember this cloud on Mars? Let's take our mind back. The cloud on Mars was seen March 12th, 2012, or 3/12. Okay, hold on just a minute. Something's not, I'm looking at a slide here. There's a misprint on this slide that's coming up. It should say the 3/12 issue of the prophetic word, and it says 3/17 for some reason. But go ahead and play the next slide. Oh, it says 3/12 on that one. Great. Praise Yahweh. It says 3/17 on mine. Oh, that's amazing. Okay, so 3/12, this is the prophetic word that came out. And this is the first time the world was shown about the signs from heaven. There will be great signs from heaven. Luke 21, what is that? 21:11. That's the 3/12 issue of the Prophetic Word magazine. Another coincidence, right? Can we have the next slide? Let's look at March 2012 on the calendar. And if you notice, the 12th is when the Mars plume was first sighted on 3/12. And it stopped on the 23rd, which is the new moon, the first moon toward the count to Passover. Okay? Remember, the 23rd is also when the Roman god Mars' festivals ended in the month of March. And it's when ours began, right? The Peacekeeper Festival. The warmonger festival ended on the 23rd. Okay, now let's see if I need to show you something else on here. Okay, so that was Yahweh's first new moon, the 23rd to the 24th. Okay, can we go to the next slide? Remember, it was seen till the 23rd, and then it went away. It went away until April 6th. It came back again. Well, what was going on April 6th? That was the evening of Passover, okay, in 2012. Passover. Now, I want to remind us of something. I have check marks on some of those because the night before was Yahshua's memorial, so that means we were all here, right? Or we should have been. Renewing our vows to Yahshua, we should have been here, right? That would have been the night of the 5th. And if you notice, the sightings of that cloud ended, I believe on, let's see, it showed a picture of April 13th of that cloud too, but the feast ended on the 13th, and the 14th was a Sabbath, so we all stayed here, okay? We didn't go anywhere, okay? And we all started going home on the 15th, okay? So during that entire time of that cloud plume on Mars, during the month of April of 2012, we were here under the cloud of Yahweh, right? Under the protection of Yahweh while that was going on, all right? Okay, now let's go to the next slide because I want to give you a definition of 4-6-12 because that's when the sighting was first seen. This is Strong's Hebrew 4612 or April 6, 2012, and it means attendance, office, function, service, station, post, office, function, service. And it's from, if you look down on the corner on the left, it's from 5975. So let's look at 5975 and see what that means. 5975, the very first definition says to stand. Write that down, to stand. And then if you notice the next underline says present oneself. Well, what do you do at the feast? Aren't you presenting yourself before Yahweh? Attend upon or become servant of. Well, isn't that what we do when we come to the feast? We become a servant and we attend to others at the feast. We're in our station. We're standing in our spot, in our post, in our office that Yahweh gave us. Look at the third one. It says to tarry, delay, remain, continue, abide, endure, persist, be steadfast. To make a stand and hold one's ground. Think now, remember this. Make a stand and stand your ground. And also that service, okay? Go to the next slide. This is, hold on. We're missing something here. That shouldn't be the next slide. I think something's not right here. Okay, yeah, right here. This is from the 312 edition of the Prophetic Word magazine. It's about in the middle of the magazine, and pastor's there, and it says, I am Yahweh's last day's witness. I am here to serve. I look forward to helping you. You need to repent now because all-out nuclear wars that will darken the sun are starting soon. For some reason, I don't have that slide in here. Oh, here it is. Okay. Now, go to the next slide. Actually, go back to the April 2012 slide again. Okay. Remember to stand, right? Notice the saying in the middle at the bottom of the calendar that month. First, you have the great Kohen Yedidiah there with Pastor, right? And at the bottom it says, the courage that you're developing right now, that he's bringing it on step by step. And in other words, Yahweh's building courage within us. That's a positive character trait. It's very necessary for you to stand up. Didn't we just see that term used for 4-6? Stand up in these last days when it gets close to the end and the change that will take place in your body and, of course, the power that you're going to receive. Now, that's a quote right there on the bottom of that calendar for that month. Okay? Amazing that he would use those terms. Okay, now, let's go now to the May 1997 calendar, and that's where I need some other notes here. A very great Kohen in Yahweh's house had that calendar available. this is the actual May 97 House of Yahweh calendar, and if you notice, remember they said that plume on Mars was seen on the 17th of May of 1997, okay? Well, what was going on around that time? First of all, May 17th was on a Sabbath day, so everybody would have been gathered here, right? Some of you are still here that were here for that service, I'm sure. Now, what was going on in 1997 around that time? Well, in 1997, 14 years before the plume was seen in March and April of 2012. It was on a Sabbath. Let's see. In that year, the peaceful solution to building the next temple in Jerusalem, which I have in my hand, was written. This book, I'm going to put it right here for you. There Is Someone Out There came out. And Pastor was pointing everybody to the fact that there's someone out there. And notice right here when he said this was going to start to be seen. 1997. Okay, now, do you know when this book was first published? March 1st, 1997. That's when this book was published. March 1st, 1997. Pastor pointing to the signs in the heaven that he said you're going to start seeing at that time. Okay, now, also, The Mark of the Beast, Volume 1, was revised in 1997. Okay, if you look on the open the cover, you'll see it was rewritten or revised, not rewritten, but revised in 1997. Now, what else occurred in 1997? In April of 1997, just a few days before this, Satan was cast to the earth. It says, in April of 97, Satan was cast to earth in the midst of tribulation. Revelation 12, 7 through 9. Remember the comet Hale-Bopp, okay, made its closest approach to earth on April 1st of that year, 97. This marked the start of the 10 years given to Satan by the courts of heaven to bring peace, as told to the Pope in 1988, and that's Revelation 12, 12. And let's see what else we have here. Let's see. So those were all the events that were taking place in 1997, right around that same time. Also, Pastor, in 1997, was 63 years old. 9 times 7 is 63. He was in his ninth time period of his life. 9 is the number of finality and judgment. Remember, things were brought out about the number 9. And 7, of course, is the number of completion or perfection. Okay, now, let's see. What am I supposed to go to next? Let me get back to my slides. Okay. I'll try not to bore you too much longer. I'm going to have to go over a little bit, okay? Now, let's go to the next slide. Oh, wait. That's not the right one. Can you back up to 1997? There's a 1997 slide. There it is. Okay. There's some of the key points that I just brought out. A peaceful solution to the building. The next temple was published in 97. Pastor was 63. There's Someone Out There was published, pointing to 1997, beginning of the signs that to watch in the heavens for things that were going to be taking place. Mark of the Beast, Volume 1, was revised, and Satan was cast to the earth in the midst of the tribulation in April of that same year. Okay, now, I told you that this sighting, this past Tuesday is when Pastor's face on the Mars was first seen, okay? It was revealed to us. And I showed you the newspaper article. It said February 17th, 2017, 2015. And remember, they still don't know what this was. Isn't it kind of strange that they would announce it on that day? Like, why didn't they announce this thing, 5 months ago, or why didn't they do it the 2/18, you know? Could have done it any time. Why was it on 2/17? Well, I looked up, let's go to the next slide, where we have the definition of 2/17. And this is from Strong's Concordance. It means flame, light of fire. And I have some circled words here, and this is what Yahshua was pointing to. It says, revelations, revelation. Sacred lot. Remember Pastor's lots? 17, 28, and 74. It means the sacred lot. It says revelation, used of the sacred lot of the Hebrews. In Numbers 27:21, you can read about it later. Also, 1 Samuel 28:6. And also means revelation and truth. Remember, the revelation of truth comes from the witness in the West. Matithiah chapter 24. Now, these sacred lots were only consulted by the high priest. The sacred lots were only consulted by the high priest in matters of great moment, meaning in very important matters, and they were borne by him in or upon his breastplate, as you can read about in Exodus 28:30. Now, strangely enough, as I told you, it dawned on me, revelation, you know, revelation. Well, let's go to Revelation. Can we go to the next slide? Remember, 2:17, Tuesday 2:17 is when this all took place. Revelation 2:17 says, "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the called out ones of the house of Yahweh. To him who overcomes," remember, overcome, prevail, conquer, "I will give to eat of the hidden manna and will give to him a white stone, a sentence of acquittal, and in the white stone a restored name, Yahweh, written, which no one acknowledges except he who understands." Yeah. I mean, what would be the odds of that? You know? Because remember, Pastor commissioned me to study about the white stone and the numbers that were on that stone. And the number 17 was the first number. And on 2:17, when I knew something was going to take place that day, I felt it. And I pray, I'm telling you, we all need to pray to be inspired every moment of the day. Because when we do, Yahweh does grant those requests, if we do. And I know, I don't know if my prayers are getting through the ceiling half the time, but I know Israel Hawkins' prayers are getting through the ceiling. And I know he's praying for us to have that inspiration. So that really helps a lot. Because it comes. Now, it says, remember the next sighting was on 3:12. The sighting was on 3:12. The first sighting of this on 3:12, 2012. Can we go to the next slide? Revelation 3:12. Again, about overcoming. "He who overcomes, I will make a pillar." Didn't they call that cloud a pillar? Did we not see that in that article? He says, this is Yahshua speaking. This is the high priest who has the power over those sacred lots, right? He says, "I will make him a pillar in the house of my Father, and he will never go out of it. And I will write upon him the name of my Father and the name of the new Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my Father, newly named." Go to the next slide, please. They're calling this a plume. The synonym for the word plume is pillar. Pillar of smoke. Because that's what it was. Remember, these are not just idle pictures. These things are being done to teach us things and show us things that are taking place. Pillar of smoke, column of smoke, smoke plume. Those are all synonyms. Remember, the most prominent of, you can go, when you go on that, the scientists that did this study that just released it about this plume, the most prominent, where you see pastor, is 3:21. Remember, 3:21 of 12, March 21st, 2012. Can we go to the next slide? Oh, this can't be a coincidence. "To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne." This is Yahshua. "As I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne." No, that doesn't mean they're sharing seats, you know. They're not sitting on each other's lap, you know, or something like that. So don't get that in your head. You know, it's this, we're serving together. We're all going to be serving together as a family. And this is a promise. And this is being inspired to bring to you, to give you that hope, that great encouragement. You know, everyone should be greatly encouraged by these things. Now, let's go to the next slide. Revelation 21:7 or 2:17. Again, he who overcomes will inherit all things, and I will be his father, and he or she will be my sons and daughters. Okay? Remember, this is speaking of the women as well. It's not just speaking about the men, guys. So don't get it in your head. You know, the women always raise the bar in the house of Yahweh. I'm telling you right now, it's hard to outdo them on their... there's no competition going on anyway. So. Okay, now I want to show you something really interesting. Let's go to the next slide. Go to Isaiah 2:17. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 2 in verse 17, because I want to tell you what this message is. This is the message that this picture of pastor on the planet named after the god of war, you know, talk about smiling in someone's face, right? I mean, named after the god of war and the man of peace, his faces are? Well, what could this mean? Isaiah 2:17. The loftiness of man will be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men will be made low. Yahweh alone will be exalted in that day. Verse 18. For he will utterly abolish Mars and all the gods of Rome. They're going to be utterly abolished. This message that was sent is showing us the man of peace is prevailed. He's going to prevail. We're going to prevail, because when you see his face, who do you see? The house of Yahweh. And what's the conquering power that Yahweh gave us? His laws, those 613 laws that the Pope says you don't need them. They're worthless, you know, those old man-made rules. Yeah. Well, why did the Apostle Jacob say that, you know, that those laws are what actually are going to bring you life? If you'll turn over real quick, I'll show you where he said that. Let's go to Jacob chapter 1 on page 953. Jacob 1:21, and this is what we're all admonished to do, like the great deacon told us earlier, the first speaker that talked about getting rid of the sin, getting rid of the leaven. Therefore, put away all filthiness and the superabundance of wickedness or lawlessness, and receive with meekness and humility the written law, which is able to save your souls. Okay? The laws, but it also says in verse 22, deed doers of the law, not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. Okay? We need to be doers of the word, not hearers only. Now, this is kind of amazing. I got to tell you, I'm going to close right here, but I got to show you something. I was standing up here with the great Kohan Ilya Hyler right before he was playing the news, and he ran the story on RT News about ISIS looking to Rome. And it said in Libya, it was 350 kilometers from Italy. Y'all heard that? If you didn't, you know, get on the mailing list, or I don't think they play the news on those, but you can watch it again. I'm sure they'll play the news. They'll make sure they put this in for you. But he said it was ISIS standing on the shores of Libya where they beheaded those men. They were looking toward Rome, and they said, "We're coming after you." Okay? 350 kilometers from Italy. Well, we did a little conversion here. 350 kilometers is 217. 217 miles. Now, let me ask you a question. Are we going to be the conquerors of Rome? Are we going to go there and commit bloodshed? No, but I'm telling you right now, somebody is. Okay, and I'm telling you right now, time is almost up. Okay, and I'm telling you right now, that we are more than conquerors, but we conquer through love. Love yourself, love your neighbor. That's the conquering power that Yahweh gave us. And if we put into practice the things that the great women told us last week and all the things we've been hearing about what we learned about in the peaceful solution, you know, we can overcome and we will overcome. Yahshua is showing us definitely we are going to do this, but we're going to do it as a body. Okay? That's all the time I have. And I'm sorry I had to go over a little bit. But may Yahweh continue to bless your understanding. Remember, we're going to abolish the gods. May Yahweh bless you, and I'll turn the services over to the next speaker for prayer. The great Kohan for prayer.